Hi, this is Stephanie Gunning, and I am pleased to introduce you to my special guest, Gail Larson. Gail is the founder of Real Speaking and the award-winning author of Transformational Speaking, If You Want to Change the World, Tell a Better Story, which was published by Random House in print and Brilliance in audio. She delights in every person finding their distinctive and influential way to speak, from the truth of who they are and what they care about, to open hearts, inspire change, and move people to act. A Small Business Association award-winning entrepreneur and catalyst for life-affirming ventures, Gail's original approach to communication draws from her own journey as a previously reluctant speaker. Her respect for Indigenous wisdom, 25 years in the world of speaking, and wide experience in business and association management. She is the former EVP of the Worldwide National Speakers Association, and she teaches annually in Vancouver, British Columbia, at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, and in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where she offers her transformational speaking immersions. And we met earlier this year because Gail came on a trip that I co-led to Peru, which was a shamanic writer's adventure, at which point I realized that she is just speaking what I am to writing. And that's a very natural synergy. So thank you so much for being here. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm delighted.
Well, this is fantastic. And, you know, we didn't do a lot of prep for this, except that we know we want to talk about how important it is for authors to speak in order to sell their books. And you had a great tagline for that. What was it?
Speak now or forever hold your book inventory.
Oh, right.
You know, I don't know, Stephanie, you probably do, but most books sell under 100 copies. That's not the books you work on, or definitely not, or the one or my book, but many people have, you know, can write a really good book and have it remain a well-kept secret. I don't think in the book world anymore.
Hey Gail, I have to stop. I have to stop you for a second because I'm getting a weird feedback on the sound quality.
Mm-hmm.
I may ask you to dial back in.
Okay.
Yeah, just dial back in. I'll pick you right up.
Okay, great.
Thanks. Okay, we'll have a temporary pause there. Gail was just coming in a little tweaky. I'm not sure what that was. So apologies for that. I don't want you to miss a word of what she has to say. So we'll be with you in 1 second. For those who are just joining, we were just having a little sound issue, so Gail is going to dial right back in. And I hope you can hear me okay. Okay. Hi, Gail, are you there?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm
much
here.
Better. Sorry about that. Okay, let's start with that question again. So it's speak now or forever hold your book inventory.
Yeah, and I read once a statistic that most books sell under 100 copies. And obviously a publisher isn't going to buy a book unless they know that one has the platform to do much better than that. But I think it speaks to the fact that it can even be a good book and be a well-kept secret. So one way to really assure that people know about the brilliant work you've written is to get out and speak about it.
I thoroughly agree. And that's a shocking statistic. Under 100 copies, when somebody has put in all the love and effort to write a book, that's kind of disappointing. And it's also not very profitable.
But don't you know a number of authors who've you know, really bought into the fact that a self-published book, you keep more of the profits and so forth, but they end up with a huge inventory. I know one writer who built a whole garage to house his book. Fortunately, he sold them. But I know many people who have a big inventory that they haven't been able to move. And I believe that speaking about what we love and what we've created is absolutely an essential part of our marketing platform to be sure that the word gets out.
Now, what do you think an author needs to do in order to become a speaker? Because I think the people who are already speakers, when they become authors, it's kind of a no-brainer. They're going to sell their books at the back of the room where they're already going. But, you know, some authors are more content to sit with their computer writing, and that whole idea of finding a speaking engagement is really a major hurdle for them, at least emotionally and mentally.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes in terms of their skills. So it may be better to start small. And you probably have had the same experience I have, Stephanie, that book signings only go so far. You can usually do pretty well in your hometown or places where you're known. But getting an audience at a book signing, it can also be a challenge in areas where your name isn't a draw. So where do we go beyond that in order to create a place for people to hear us? So you can start close to home. Just about every, well, you know, you have to start with, okay, what is your message? If you're doing a speaking engagement, you're obviously not speaking from your book or reading from your book, although you may do some of that. So I think it's looking at, okay, who's going to be interested in what I most care speaking about? I talk to my clients about, if you know your medicine and your message, you're going to simplify and amplify every decision about your speaking and where you choose to show up. And medicine is...
When you say what your medicine is?
Yeah, medicine is an indigenous concept. It's called original medicine. And it's knowing that each person comes with gifts and talents that are nowhere else duplicated. And then the second part of that teaching is, if we don't bring that forward in whatever way we choose to do it, writing or speaking or two of those ways, it's lost to the world for all time. So I ask people to get really clear about what makes them distinctive, what makes them stand out. So much of our enculturation is how we fit in, but as a speaker or as a writer, standing out is essential so that people say, hey, I want that, and they can relate to it and recognize that it's something that you and your work can be valuable to them. So knowing your medicine and then being very clear about your message. So if it's a nonfiction book, it's probably you've already done the work of identifying what that key message is. You pretty much have to do it to know where it fits in the bookstore. You know,
yes,
what
that's what
you, is
a positioning in. Statement is absolutely right, and that is where I begin with authors even before they put pen to paper, is to ask them that: who is your target reader?
So then, as a speaker, you say, okay, where does my target audience gather? So if, for example, you can look at professional groups, you can look at community groups, and if someone is not a seasoned speaker, I totally recommend speaking for free, getting good at it, and not even starting to think about speaking for money until you really are ready to step up to that platform, because then the stakes are so much higher. And so when you say that.
Let me ask you about that. So a lot of people are reluctant to do that. It's sort of to speak for free, I mean, because I think it's a sort of an assault on their ego in a way. I actually enjoy that when I'm in the right community, because it's a networking possibility, and I find it always raises my self-esteem and confidence levels a lot.
Well, it also raises your profile.
Mm-hmm.
If it's, well, it depends what your business is. There are organizations I am delighted to travel to and speak because they represent the people I most want to work with, and they don't tend to pay speakers' fees. But if I know that that's where my target audience is gathered, being on the speaking platform is absolutely the best way to get their attention.
Right. And then it leads to other opportunities developing, right? Because you're with
absolutely.
The right people.
Mm-hmm. Because what we want to do is line up like a barcode with the people who can really hear us and benefit from what we have to offer. So if we offer workshops such as I do that are multi-day programs and an investment for people to come to, they want to know that they have some comfort level with who I am and the value I'm going to bring before they make that decision. So that's why I say for my business model, I'm not interested in booking myself out as a high-paid speaker because for me, that's hard on the body. I choose not to travel too much. And my clients come to me in Santa Fe. So it can be an ego thing, but I think we need to put that ego aside and say, why am I speaking? And in this case, we're talking about speaking to sell books and speaking to have people know who we are so they care about the message that we're bringing and know that they will benefit from taking the next step with us.
Do you think that a speech needs to be 20 minutes, a half an hour? Is there a particular length that people should work to create a signature speech at?
I work with my clients on 20 minutes. It's basically a way we can really bring in a solid message and build some interest, and we can always expand it. But you know what? That's the length of a TED Talk, which has become very popular. TED Talks are 12 to 18 minutes, and we see them turn up online, and we see how much someone can really say if they're focused and structured and are willing to then be spontaneous and relatable from the platform.
Do you recommend that people memorize a speech and practice giving it as if it's spontaneous, or that they just memorize kind of key moments and then flow through them?
I never recommend a script. I think what it does is distance us from ourselves and from our audience in the moment. I suggest that people storyboard it. I use yellow sticky notes. Take a sheet of flip chart paper, put it on your wall, and put your key ideas and concepts and stories on sticky notes, and then start organizing them. And I recommend going through it without memorizing it, but trusting oneself in the moment. Because if it's memorized, and I actually had a Toastmaster attend a program recently who was accustomed to memorizing everything. And he said, oh, I'm going to try this, because this process of having an underlying structure that allows you to be spontaneous in the moment, it really works. He went out next week, and he was in a big contest with people who'd been in the business for a very long time. And he let go of his script, and he moved forward with his underlying structure, allowing himself to be spontaneous and trust that he knew it, and he won this big contest. So I got the email about that, which I thought was really exciting. But last week he told me that then he reverted to his old habits, and it didn't work at all. And what he found was that when you memorize, if something happens to throw you off, like everyone applauding, getting excited, an interruption, you lose your place. And he didn't know where to get back in. So it's asking us to be in our mind as opposed to fully embodying our message. And people want to feel us. They want to know we're there and that we really believe what it is we're saying. And if it's just a talking head, I've memorized it, I've learned my gestures, technique doesn't go too far for being trustworthy anymore.
Wow. So when you connect with people on that deeper level, because you're really present with them in the room that you're in, so you're looking out over your audience and you're really connected, is that not only more powerful, but does that actually lead to them wanting your book more? I mean, do you find that they want to take a piece of you home with them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the nice thing about a 20-minute speech is you can only do so much. So as a writer, for example, you might, if you've got six principles, you might want to bring alive just a few of them, and then they get the book to get the rest. But I think they want an experience of you and the value of what you bring. So when they get that, then the book becomes something that gives them that. And that's why I think reading it doesn't work. Because, you know, if you work at a book signing, they expect you to read some of your book so they get the flavor for it. But frankly, I've done book signings where I've never read a bit of my book. And I've got to tell you, Stephanie, when I do book signings, I sell to everybody.
Mm.
So
that's amazing.
Unless they already have the book, everybody wants the book. Because
and
I realize...
Yeah. Do you actually have a moment in your talk or just right at the end you say, I'm going over to the table and if you want to come sign a book, you know, I'll be happy to, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And obviously in bookstores, that's how it's set up.
Yeah.
So, and I have done book events. You know, when my book first came out, I did events that weren't in bookstores, but I always asked a bookstore to be there because I'm more interested in developing a relationship with people who will sell my books rather than trying to make a little extra money by selling them myself.
Yes, yes. I love those kinds of events where if somebody pays an admission, let's say, to some kind of dinner party or some kind of event where the cost of the book is just factored in. Have you ever done that kind of thing?
No, but I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Unless you're appealing to people who already have it. Then they might get annoyed.
Right. Well, they could always give it to their friend, right?
Yes, but they still might get annoyed.
Yes, they might. They might very well. But you're also talking about, so a book signing is obviously a free event, and people are there because they love to read, they're interested in the topic, and so there's sort of a natural affinity with the sales process. But you're also talking about really finding that audience, which is, it's not only readers, but it's the audience that you serve with the theme of your book, with the message of your book. And I love this idea of original medicine. I was watching Charlie Rose last night, and they were interviewing Marilyn Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg, who run Facebook, she said we only do one thing, we connect the world, and I thought to myself, yes, you know, if I could get what I do down to three words, I would never hesitate to go anywhere and talk about anything because I would always know. That's their original medicine in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that idea.
Getting our message, and our original medicine can be a description of who we are that can be very private, but we know it helps us make decisions because we can say, okay, can I be this? in this particular situation. So I just finished an immersion with six people. And I'd like to, I'm just going to not put their names to it, of course, but tell you how they describe their medicine. Infuser of life. Star-filled womb. Angel of alchemy. Abiding heart. Crazy angel. Intrepid seeker. So our medicine isn't a description of everything we are, but it's a few words that remind us of the truth of who we are, so we'll show up in that fully and not shrink. Because a lot of us, especially around speaking, can get caught in a wounded or outdated image of ourselves or some horrible high school experience where we had to speak and fainted. I can't tell you how often I've heard that. and go into speaking in a reluctant way. And so to know your medicine is to stand in the truth of who you are as a reminder, because it's very solid grounding. And then having the message brought down to a few words. Mine, in terms of speaking, is be yourself. Everyone else is taken. But we don't want to be like it. We don't want it to be like someone else. We want to be fully, outrageously, irreverently, seriously, whatever it is, ourselves, so that people can relate to a real human being. And that message, when you put the medicine and the message together, it becomes very distinctive. In the last year, I actually saw at an art fair a quote by Robin Williams that said, we are each given a spark of madness, and we mustn't lose it. And I think the best speakers are in touch with their spark of madness and bring it up to the speaking platform, because it becomes distinctive and unforgettable.
Oh, I love it. I, you know, what a relief, honestly, to just be authentically yourself, idiocratically, syncratically, naturally, organically yourself. That to me is that the piece that's transformational about your work, and the piece that is transformational about actually standing with a group of people and being present in that essential way.
Mm-hmm.
And it really requires less energy, and it's much less of a struggle to operate that way, I would imagine. Is that not so?
Well, I think once we get it, that's true. But I think part of the challenge is there's so many messages that keep us from that authentic expression, what we're supposed to do. One of the women last weekend was talking about being in a box and the need to erase the lines. So I think we think there's a way to speak that maybe other people know and we don't. And it requires drawing out our own original way of showing up. One of the best questions to ask yourself is, when I am feeling totally relaxed and unjudged and safe, what part of me comes forward that I love about myself? Because we can get into speaking thinking, well, I have to be professional, I have to be serious, I have to be so many things, that we lose that essential energy that with our friends and the people we love or that we're close to makes them love us. And why would we leave that out when we come to the speaking platform?
Yes, I think that's a great question. So the question, just to repeat it back, is if I'm safe, if I'm relaxed, what
unjudged.
Part of me comes and unjudged, what part of me comes forward that I love? This is
mm-hmm.
a terrific question.
Because then we can show up and enjoy it.
And there's also that greater possibility that the people we're with will love us too. You know?
Well, I enjoy what Gertrude Stein said about beware the double ouch. She said the first ouch is when you pretend you're someone else so that people will like you. And then the second ouch is when your cover gets blown and they reject you anyway. She says, go for the one ouch. It's much less painful. And so what if as speakers, as writers, we go for the one ouch? We don't need the whole world to love us or to relate to us, but we need to find the right people who can really benefit from what we've put out, what we're putting out in the world. And the only way we're going to find them is our willingness to be in touch with that spark of madness, that medicine that's ours and ours alone, and put it out fully. Because otherwise you do have a double ouch. You never know what might have happened had you been willing to step into the truth of that.
Right. Now, you and I both share a colleague, a friend, a client, my friend Tina Clenaris Robinson, who I was helping to write a book proposal. I discovered halfway through the process that she had done your speaking course. And she's quite an awesome woman. She had a very tragic circumstance in her life where she lost a child in childbirth. And she subsequently, as part of her healing process, went through a massive forgiveness process and connected with a group of people who were working in Rwanda, where there was a terrible civil war and a genocide. And she began working with the people there to help in the reconciliation movement. And she was terribly afraid of speaking when she met you. And I would love to, I have her permission to talk about a little bit about her story publicly. So I'm curious to know what your experience was with working with her.
Well, Tina was in a class of 20-something people in an introductory class at Omega last summer. And so in those shorter classes, I can only work with a few people and demonstrate what's possible. And as I recall, she was the first one to have her hand go up. And because she's a writer, it took me a while to get this, Stephanie, but if someone has memorized what they've written, it sounds so beautiful, but you're missing something.
Mm.
So after a few minutes, I said to her, Tina, are you telling us your story from what you've written? And she said, yes. And I said, then what I'd like you to do is put that aside, anything you've memorized, anything you've scripted, and breathe into it. And tell us in a way you've never said it before. Well, as she did that, what happened was, of course, she got into the emotion of it. And what she was wanting to do was avoid the emotion because she was afraid she would lose it, as they say. And I said to someone last week I coached who, he was a Navy SEAL, and he was speaking, and he teared up, and he said he lost it. And I said, you know, I call that finding it, because you're finding your connection to what requires that you speak. If you're not emotionally connected to it, how is your audience going to be? And so you can remove yourself from the emotion with a comfort zone of reading something that feels safe or memorizing something that feels safe. But I talk about the home zone where you're completely aligned. You're grounded, you're feeling your head, your lips, your heart all saying the same thing. And you're also connected with Source so that it can come through you in a way you wouldn't have thought of in advance, but is right for the moment. And I always say, you know, that happens when someone says to you, would you repeat what you just said? I need to write it down. And you have no conscious memory of it. And it can happen a lot when you move into that place of trust. So Tina's story was completely captivating. It left us in a place of not even having words because it was so powerful. And after the class was over, she thanked me and said she had entered a contest for a book proposal, I think, where she had done for a book publishing contest with a publisher, and which books were they going to publish. And because she had spoken with emotion, someone who's a best-selling author said to her, you would have won if you hadn't been emotional. And she said to me, this is the first time I've spoken in a year. It totally shut off my voice.
Right.
So again, it's that piece of what's expected, and are we willing to move beyond a comfort zone, which is kind of boring, to that home zone where we are completely aligned with our message and the right people who are going to be touched by it will be touched and can move forward in their lives with a different decision. And in Tina's case, because of her enormous courage and forgiveness, which was quite a journey for her, because in her story, the medical system had really let her down. And so do you decide you're going to sue somebody, spend your life in something that continues to sap your energy, or do you move out in the world as she has and make the difference that she's making?
We have a question online, and I'd like to read it to you. And I think we've covered this a little bit, but just to repeat, should you prepare for speaking engagements or be spontaneous and or intuitive?
Both. We need that underlying structure. We need to have a plan and a sense of where we're going, which is the benefit of the storyboard. That gives us a structure to hang on to that assures that we deliver what the audience, you know, what we've contracted to do. It's professional. But then the thing that makes it really work is our willingness to intuitively say in the moment, this is going to be a better story than that one for this group. And that allows the spontaneity that they feel your presence in a way that they don't if you are so prepared that you are inflexible about where it might go. Because every audience is a different energetic. The third part of my book is the energetics of speaking, which was a stretch for me, but I started realizing that the space we step into is different every time. So what works today probably won't work tomorrow.
So when you, let's talk a little bit more about storyboarding. I'm fascinated. So storyboarding is sort of like the way a filmmaker makes a film. They draw a little picture, like here's this scene, here's this scene, here's this scene, and then they connect them until there's a sort of a natural progression and the story emerges from the edits in a way. in a speech, it would be like, I'm going to tell the story of when I went fishing with my father when I was five. and you figure that I'm going to give this about 3 minutes, or, you know, do you assign time frames to each thing? How do you
know?
No,
absolutely not, because some of us have bigger stories than others. But story is so important. There's Native American wisdom says, tell me a fact and I'll listen. Tell me a truth and I'll hear. Tell me a story, and it will live in my heart forever. So people now, you know, whether it's advertising or, you know, company culture, everyone's talking about the story. But the truth is, just like Tina telling her story while trying to stay emotionally removed didn't work. It doesn't live in your heart forever when it comes from a mental place. You have to embody it. So if you've got a big story, it can be 10 minutes of your speech. Or you can go back to scenes in it and make points and applications. The truth of story is, if it's done right and not from an egotistical place, but from a deep sharing of this is how I know what I know, it's other people's story too. And it's what they know in film. It's the hero's journey. You're going to have the same, you know, you're bopping along, you think life is normal, you hit an obstacle, you can choose not to go on the journey. The universe keeps upping the ante. You finally have no choice. You hit big obstacles. You have help along the way. You somehow slay the dragon and emerge from it. And the final piece of it is you return to the village and share the learning. Mm. And whether it's a movie or a book or a speech, that's what people want. They want to know that they can be successful too. And by totally trusting that we've lived it, and we know whereof we speak, then they can trust us to help them through the challenge that they're facing in the moment. Otherwise, they can look it up online.
Now, what is this idea of that, and I know you disagree with the idea of sanitizing, quote-unquote, your message. When does that come up?
Well, that's what I saw with Tina. She sanitized it so she would, you know, she would make it so she would not get emotional about it. So she calmed it down. She put words around it that she liked, but the words removed her from her emotional connection with it. So once she got emotionally connected, the message reached us all in such a deep way that it wasn't when she sanitized it. So I think what we do is try to clean up the messy stuff in our lives. It's really the truth of our story. And when we move into speaking, we want to look like, hey, I figured it out. I'm the expert. And the truth is, the only things we've really figured out, we've probably gone through the difficulty of the journey to find the way through that is valuable to other people. And if we sanitize it and we're only standing on the other side of it victorious, it's hard for them to believe we really know what they're going through right now.
Now, I've been exposed to many speakers who do this kind of high testosterone speaking where they're like, I dominate, I this, I that, and it's all this kind of like constant bragging. And I find it really tiresome to listen to. This is a very different kind of speaking, is it not?
It is. And, you know, I've thought about that, Stephanie. You know, you and I have developed our businesses around people of spirit, who are consciously on a soul journey and want to share that with others. So I get a sense, as I've thought about it, that it is about soul age. There are people who are always going to be the dress for success, see you at the top. It's all an outer world kind of thing. You've got to be successful. You can't be vulnerable. You've got to get them before they get you. That's a whole different kind of speaking. And it does tend to be highly motivational and hypey. And I don't like it either. And yet there's still people who find that very helpful. So, again, it's about finding what your medicine is, your your message, your market, and putting yourself in places where you can be successful rather than where you don't meet an expectation because the worldview is so different from who you are.
Yes, so many of the people who are listening to this call, because they've joined us from my mailing list and your mailing list, are more likely to, my phone looks like it's going to die. I'm going to have to switch in 1 second. Oh, no. The people who are listening here are most likely going to really resonate with the idea of authenticity, and I think that, you know, if you know that you're in that type of community, and your book and your medicine is for the benefit of other people who value authenticity and I want to say like humanized values or something like that. There, it's not the right word, but. There's definitely a sort of a counter response to the hype and the constantly outer driven. I think that these are heart people, you know. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking very much about an experience I had after I traveled through the Middle East, and I came back and I was invited to give a talk about what I had seen. To an audience that in a Unitarian church, and I was sort of roped into it by my father, and I was so frustrated and angry with some of the things that I had seen, and I did begin to cry, and I couldn't breathe, Gail, and I was so choked up, and I so wanted to deliver my message, and I do think it reached people, but I mean, when I started communicating about it, I was flooded with a bunch of emotions I hadn't dealt with at the time. So,
yeah. You know, and when it's really raw, it's a big risk. I find that people, when they tell the story for the first time, may have a lot of emotion that frightens them. But what I've seen is that once we release it, those tend to be our best stories because they continue to be informed by that emotion. And if they don't touch us that deeply, why are we telling them? I love the poet David White. He says, anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. So in our speaking, we have to find what brings us alive for it to have a chance of bringing anyone else alive.
So we've got a few minutes left. I want to remind people that they can ask a question by typing it into the box. Now I've plugged myself in, and of course I am away from my computer. Hold on, I got to reorient myself here. I can just check that. Are there things that you typically get asked, Gail, that we should know about?
Well, I get asked a lot about the difference between the comfort zone and the home zone. And I'm not suggesting we throw out our comfort zone. We need that. A lot of people ask about the fear of speaking because they're not comfortable speaking. And I love what Fritz Perl said when he said, fear is excitement without the breath. What's it like to do conscious breathing exercises? And these are on my website at realspeaking.com. Under the blog, there's an article of three speaking exercises that were developed for speakers. And the first one is that multiple exhalation. It's and if you do that several times, you start feeling your energy coming down from all this anxiety that builds up into your belly so that you're more in your full body when you stand up to speak. So this capacity to breathe through it is part of what can help. A second thing that can help is to be so committed to your message, it doesn't matter that you're nervous. You know, it is such a part of you, and you were so passionate about sharing it that you were going to get out of your way and get up anyway.
I love that. So you are responsible for delivering that message, and it matters.
And you're the only one who can do it.
Yes.
Right, you're the only one that can do it, because it's your medicine, your message. No one sees the world the way you do. And if you don't get over yourself and put yourself out there, it's going to be lost. There was a woman who spoke at Bioneers, Lily Yeh, who had gone into Africa and all this broken glass from ruined villages from war, started creating beautiful art from the glass, mosaic. And she got up and she was so scared. And she said, "The only thing that scared me more was not doing what I'm saying, what I'm about, and standing up to do this, because then my life would be lost." When it's that important, we move through it. And a third hint that's worked for me, because I'm really pretty soft-spoken and not the big energy platform type, and I used to be terrified, or that's what I called it, I now reframe that energy in my body as excitement and my body getting ready to speak to a group instead of to one person. So I get a little more, if I don't feel that energy, I define as fear. But I know I need more available to me to reach an audience than I do a small group. Probably when I'd add, Stephanie, is really getting grounded. To think of your roots down from the base of your feet to the center of the earth and bring that up through your body and your energy centers and connect it up above you to source so that you can be a clear channel for what wants to happen in the moment.
Now, the audience will really give you space. They don't know what's going on with you internally. They're just looking at you, right? So if you take a moment to ground, they see a person standing there who's present in their body, and that's kind of interesting, actually, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we think we want a comfort zone, and it's professional. It means we know what we're there to say. We're going to give them enough information to make it worth their time. But most speakers stop there. So for me, home zone is where we show our emotion, where we show our vulnerability, where we demonstrate our passion. Because it's the human connection then, not just the professional connection. And that's what's memorable. That's what moves people.
Right. Now we have another question. The question we've received is, how personal should you get with your story? How much pain with the story do you share with the audience?
Well, it depends so much on the story. But if people don't know you've been there, how are they going to trust you that what you know can help them with their great pain? So you don't talk about it from a distance. You don't sanitize it. You allow yourself to feel. I tell people to relive it, don't retell it. And let your body inform you so it doesn't become a script. Because every time you move your body through your story on a stage, you remember different details. So it never becomes old to you. When it does, that's yesterday's masterpiece and you need to get rid of it. I think it really depends in terms of, it would be very hard to speak to that without knowing the story. But if we go back to Tina, who said we could use her as an example, she kept talking about losing her daughter And I said, you know, as an audience member, I want to know her name. I want to know more details. And another thing I've learned, Stephanie, is if we do not release the emotion, if we hear a really tough story and someone is emotionally removed from it, the audience ends up holding a bag. They are ready just to scream or jump out of their skins because there's something that doesn't fit. You're hearing the story without feeling that it touched the speaker. So how much pain, until we're willing to hold it and be responsible for it, it doesn't work. So I think they have to see us and know that we've lived it, and I can't be more specific than that without knowing the details of the story.
Let me try an idea out on you, Gail. I think there's a missing piece there, which is that when you're being when you're telling a personal story in front of an audience, you're not just telling the story for the purpose of releasing emotion purely. You're actually doing it for the benefit of the audience. Is that not part of it?
Absolutely. I mean, we're not telling a story that doesn't have an application to them.
Right, so this is a lesson or an inspiration or something. So, you know, I would in writing at least, I feel that the desire to articulate yourself on paper is the first impulse, but that it's what happens inside the reader, and after you get over that initial impulse to share, if it's not being received, you haven't done your job. Like, the circle is not complete, right? So
right.
I'm imagining that on stage, the same is true. If you're telling your story and your details, somehow it's not what you're trying to communicate is not getting across, then you can see it on the faces of the audience, you know. Although now that I've just said that, I have a totally contrasting experience, which was I gave a talk to a group of staff members at the United Nations on using gratitude as a mechanism to create world peace. And I spoke to them for about an hour, actually. And they were so riveted that they actually didn't look. Their face, all I could see was them staring at me. And they were listening, you know, and they were processing. But it was really weird because I had not done a lot of speaking before, and I didn't know that meant they were engaged.
It's hard, and it depends on parts of the world and parts of the country. I mean, people can be really engaged and you wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
You know, and you sometimes it's good to just stop and check in because they don't tell their face.
So you you just like ask them, are you with me? And they go, or something.
Yeah, and if they're not, say, well, let me go back. And if they are, say, just check it. I couldn't quite tell.
Right. I think that's a pretty masterful way of handling it.
As a very fluid, organic experience that we co-create with an audience. Because you don't know who's there. I mean, anything we can do early on to find out who and where they are really sets us up to be far more successful. So if it's a local group, go to a few meetings before you speak. Get to know some people. If you're flying out of town and it's totally new to you, ask the person who's bringing you in for the names of three or four people you might talk to before you come, so that you're really sure what you're saying applies to what they need right now. Just showing up and taking what we get doesn't work either. You have to set up the environment for your own success based on what you know you need. I mean, the last thing you need is a huge, cavernous meeting room for 20 people. How do you ever pull in the energy there to be successful? So it's all a create and adjust.
There's no real formula for it.
I love the idea of asking for what you need as a speaker to be successful. That,
yeah,
you know,
a few experiences of not getting it, we learned that one pretty early. I actually have in the back of my book a pre-arrival questionnaire and also questions to consider. Like, I like to meet in a circle. Whenever I can, I want a circle, not a line of chairs, rows of people.
Right. Right. For the people who are on screen, I did put a big button there so you could go to her book page. I love this book. I've been reading it and sort of rereading it at intervals. I don't know, Gail, if you're aware, but this past year was really when I started doing more speaking and workshops, and so I'm learning a lot right now, and it's really it's just such a different milieu to have people right there present with me. But I do feel that writing and speaking are very parallel. It's in the same zone.
Mm-hmm. I think to get it out absolutely requires that deep connection to the home zone, so that it's personal, it's relatable, it's applicable. The challenge with speaking is you can't just say, read my book. You have to keep showing up in that place every time. And so I know a lot of people think, gee, I need to make money at this. How do they make so much money? It's not easy. I mean, the people who really consistently perform make good money for good reason, because they have to get on airplanes. They have to be with strangers all the time. They don't have their own cheerleading squad. Every engagement is a different situation. They have to navigate, and they have to pull it off 100% of the time, or they don't get hired.
Right. So, Gail, when is the next time you're doing your full immersion workshop?
December, it's been filled for a couple of months, and then I'm taking January off. As you know, Stephanie, it's been a year of some losses for me, and I'm wanting some space I haven't had. So I start up again on February 16th, and then I'll do one a month until probably through June. And I work with just six people at a time.
And that's beautiful. So how many days does that last?
It's 4 days. Six people, and I don't trust that anyone comes in knowing their best material. I think we get in jet lag about who we've become in this life journey. So we do a few days of exploration and catching up with ourselves and building our skills through what comes up in the moment with the group processes. And then we start really looking at, okay, what's that signature story? What's that message? And I am the one to deliver, and I have earned the right to deliver. And then on the last evening, everyone creates a new presentation using this storyboard technique. And then on the last day, we hear from everyone. And if people come in thinking they know it, it usually changes dramatically. So I say, let's not even try to put it together until the end.
I love it. Well, I'm definitely going to come do one of your events. I'm not sure if I can do December, but maybe February. So count me in.
Wonderful.
I see we're actually right at the end of this. And if people have any questions, I think you should also feel free to email Gail. She's gail@realspeaking.com. I will be sending around a link so you can listen to this again if you like. And just want to say thank you, Gail, because I really learned a lot, and it was great to hear your voice.
And yours, and thanks to everyone who's tuned in. And I just really hold with you the possibility for being the agent of change and inspiration that you know is possible through your life journey.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to sign off then. Thanks a lot, Gail. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Mm-hmm. Journey well.